Annyeonghaseyo! Welcome back to Crash Landed on K-Dramas. This is your host Meena, back with our two wonderful guests, Benny and Vipula, on the second episode of this special showcase on moving K-Drama. Today's episode is aptly titled, Tell Me Your Secrets, because we are going to cover episode 4 and 5 of this drama, where more secrets are unraveled. And while we three have clearly said we have checked out of teen romance, this teen pair of Bongseok and Hee-soo is hell-bent on proving us wrong. Alright, so Benny and Vipula, we stopped at the first three episodes where Bongseok was floating in air because he couldn't control his emotions for Hee-soo. Vipula, do you want to pick up what happens after he floats in his air? Does Hee-soo manage to get him to the ground or not?
Yeah, I mean, he floats for quite some time and Hee-soo being the one trying to get him down doesn't really help significantly. He literally tells her, yeah, I can't get down because you're hugging me. Stop hugging me. But that goes on. It's super cute. It's super cute. They've done it really well. I think both the actors have nailed their expressions, and it goes on for a while, and then she very adorably walks him home, literally physically grounding him, you know, as they walk him. So it's a very nice comically done scene, but also very soft at the same time. So I like that. It's a good setup to how the relationship will progress, you know, during this episode and the next episode. So that's nice.
Funnily enough, when we were putting down our notes, I realized last episode we said, stressed upon the fact that we don't like teenage romance. We've checked out. We don't like it. But our first notes are all about Hee-soo and Bongseok.
They've done it so well. Like the romances, I was literally squealing like a teenage girl. Like, oh my God. And Hee-soo is so incredible in this, you know, the more mature girl, the slightly immature boy, you know, that kind of makes sense. And they've played it off really well. Even in small things like this crisis moment, right? Like, so that was really, so that's, we kick it off. Like the secret is big and out and it's in the air, literally in the air.
I was reading on Reddit. It was like a floating for you is the new falling for you.
Yes.
In
yes.
Love.
That is so true. That is so true.
And they enter, and obviously he has not anticipated his mother is going to be there. So Benny, it's your favorite actress. So I guess you want to talk about this whole meet cute between the mom and the girl.
I mean, I could spend an entire episode talking about this scene. Like, it is hands down one of my favorite scenes from the entire season. And I think this is the point at which I knew I was just going to love this show, and it would be probably one of my favorite. And again, that's in a huge part due to Han Yu-ju, obviously, because I watched it for so many years in mostly movies, and then only recently in like K-dramas. But this scene was like a great example of what she's so good at. Like, there was no flaw in her performance in this entire scene. Right from the moment, you know, when the door opens and she goes to see who it is, that initial shock, she's like, it's actually confusion. She's like, wait a minute, my son and a girl? Like, no, that doesn't make sense. You know, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would be with an attractive girl as well. And that whole stretch right from that part, and it helps that I really like her as an actress. And in this, she just proves like why she is so good. Because she meets the girl for the first time. It starts with this disbelief, but then that slow realization, and it's all through the eyes. It's all her smile, right? Because first she's not smiling. She realizes it, and she cannot control her excitement and happiness that her son is with a girl. Like, I mean, like she says, you're a girl. And she's like, yeah. And she's like, you're pretty though. And it's like, she's going through, you know, this whole journey of her own.
And then she's holding the hand through the entire conversation, like a shaking
exactly.
hand. And like this whole, this,
it's such a sweet gesture. Yeah. She's like, literally like, is she for real? Is she for real? That was what was getting conveyed with the way she was holding her hand.
So. Yeah, one of my concerns prior to when I was watching the show initially was, I don't know how she would be able to portray a mother or a young mother. Like, it doesn't, because I've never seen her in that kind of role before. So I was like, that might take me out of the show. But in this one scene, she knocked all of that out because she was such a mother in this scene, right?
Total like, mom, yeah. The amount of food, like, such an Asian mom thing to do, right? Like, the amount of, like, buckets of food for the kids.
Insane
like, amount of food. When all fails resort to food, right? Yeah. Like, that's... Yeah. So...
And, you know, the whole part about her holding Hyosu's hands for so long, she's also, like, smiling and she kind of, like, laughing. And that stretch goes on for so, like, a little too long that it now is awkward. And that moment is hilariously awkward. And I just love her expression on her face. Like, again, there was no flaw. There was no, you couldn't see she was acting. It was like, she was literally like a typical mother who was excited that her son has a girlfriend moment. So I was just like enjoying it on rewatch as well.
Yeah, I felt like there was a part of Han Yu-ju, the actress, also fangirling over Go Yoon-jung, the actress, as to how gorgeous and pretty she is. There was an element of that also in it. It like mutual admiration society, like great, wonderful, great execution.
Yeah.
One of the things that pleasantly surprised me, you know, apart from the performances and just like the hilarity of the scene, right? And because we have seen this really paranoid, overprotective mom, right? This could have also gone really south. Like, why is the new stranger in your life? And does she know too much? What does she know? And I love the fact that this super protective, paranoid mom knows that I bought my boy has brought a girl home and I should just let them be, right? And like, you know, the cabbage cutting scene, like, in the end, like, what am I going to do with all this cabbage, right? So like, she's literally trying to give them as much space and as much time possible, which is very surprising given everything that we've seen about her, right? Like, she's super protective, overly paranoid, and just, and we don't know a lot of the, like, context and story yet, but we know that that's her parenting style. So just to be so pleasantly welcome, I mean, it could have also been written in a completely different way, right? So I love the way they took it. They took it in this more positive.
But it is an evolution, right?
Yeah,
her character had an arc that we as viewers will only realize as the season proceeds. We saw a little bit in the previous episode where we see the early stage when the son was really young.
Yeah.
She was overly protective. She was all of that. She was just like wanting to have him sheltered. But by now... She's changed a lot.
Yeah.
And she's more discerning. She's not completely hiding him away, but at the same time, she's being very smart about who he is in contact with and all of that. So it's a great character arc that many viewers may not get immediately, but will understand as the season goes on.
So anyway, so they go up to Bong-suk's room, and Bong-suk is all about, now that Hee-soo knows, how much do I tell her, not tell her, etc. So he shows the ceiling, that how the mom is padded up, etc. And I loved Hee-soo in this one. Okay, I think she's very smart. She's very confident.
Totally.
And he's like, no, I've not floated. I don't float at home. I don't need the weights at home. And she just walks up to him very closely. And she says, so what is it? Do you float when I'm around? Does that mean you like me? He's just blown away. He doesn't know how to react because Bong-suk is so naive. He has no idea.
But I have to say this. I am like totally girl crushing on Hyosu's character. Like, I loved her the first time around. Like, I love her self-awareness. And we learn more why, like, as we go around. But just her self-awareness, her, you know, she's a little cocky about herself, but not in an arrogant, offensive way. Like, I know you like me. I like that. But I am more confident of it than you are. Like, that sort of thing, right? She doesn't ever force the issue. Like, she doesn't like pin him into a corner, like, you have to admit you like me. And so she's very, very, she is a nice person at the end of the day. That's what it is. She's just a different level of like maturity and confidence than Bong-suk, who's totally a dork and totally the cutest thing around.
And on this point, Vipula, because we've not yet progressed in the story, when the parents' backstories start playing out, people have to come back to these scenes to understand why these two kids are like that and their scenes together. There will be a lot of parallels and we will come back. But again, like you had done the call out the first time, right? Pay attention to every character, every dialogue, every scene. There is a callback in the next episode. So It's great. I love how their dynamic is.
I am just very impressed that Han Hyo-joo's character actually allowed a girl to go into her son's room and, you know, just proceeds. I was like, that is not what a typical Asian mom would do. But you know what? The story has to progress. So.
No, I that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think she did the right thing. I would have thought like her protectiveness would have like just kept them in front of her eyes, right? But she was like, oh, you know what? I have customers in the restaurant now. You just go upstairs. And I like the fact that she trusted them alone. And I really like that.
Yeah, she does trust them, but she also has a lot of senses, right? Her super abilities are very strong.
Right, she can afford to do that because she's not fully unaware of what's going on.
Exactly.
Like other people have to use nanny cams, right? She can just yaw them.
It leads to one of my favorite interactions / dialogue, you know, when Hyo-joo is talking, Bong-suk is kind of being vulnerable in this moment, right? Because he's never really had an opportunity to open up with anyone, whether it be his mom or his peers. Like, this is the first time, and he's saying like, oh, I have this power or ability, and it's weird. We've seen all of this in TV shows and movies where superpowered individuals have to kind of contend with their and how they deal with that in their lives. And some shows and movies do a really good job at it. And I would add this to the list because I love it. It's very simple. It's a simple line. But when Hyo-joo says, you're not weird, you're just special, right? And the mother is listening in. And I think for me, that really struck a chord. And it was just, again, it may have hit different if I was like 10 or 15 years younger, because I would have seen it from the perspective of Bong-suk. But now I'm seeing it from the perspective of a parent. And just seeing, again, I don't want to be just like fangirling over Han Hyo-joo all the time, which I don't mind, but I probably shouldn't spend too much time on it alone. But again, the acting in this is so subtle. Like half the time her eyes are actually facing downward, right? Like she's doing something in the kitchen, but she's listening in, but she's doing those pauses and that slow, like look up. And even like she doesn't like give like a wide smile or anything. Yeah. It's just like a very subtle smile mixed with like a tinge of like, just like almost like tears. Like it was just this great scene of a parent just being so happy after years of struggle, after years of protecting her son, realizing that there are other people in the world who are looking out for her son and who accept him as he is and think he's special and not just being weird. So again, beautiful thing.
I was just saying that it was also the relief on her face in a way, right? I saw a sense of relief that some people will accept him and maybe he has found someone, at least for now, who accepts him.
Yeah, but at the same time, in the first episode when you mentioned that this, though it's a drama about superheroes and they've not gone all flashy and CGI exposing how the super abilities come out, this is a great scene to pay attention to as to how they drop that she has the high sense super ability. I mean, I that's what I thought. I was like, what a way to do it. Because otherwise, they would have shown some flashy scene of hers or fighting or something like that coming out, right? They didn't do that. And that's how, even with Hyo-joo's dad, the way it comes out, the way they are revealing the abilities these people have is done so subtly. You just sit back and grasp it and enjoy it. It's like, wow, who thought? How did they write the scene well? So well. So yeah, that's great. Their scene is lovely. And obviously now she has to go home. She unfortunately can't stay over at Bong-suk's place.
She wants to, but she can't.
It's a bit too soon. So she's like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to go don her yellow raincoat, which I loved. I don't know why I love the yellow raincoat. I don't know if there's any symbolism around it, but I just loved it. And she is heading out to the bus. And this is where I loved Han Yuju's interaction with Bong-suk. Like, what a mom she is.
You idiot child of mine. It's like,
why are you like this? She's like, why? And we'll come back to where I thought that at that time she was probably thinking, this is where he's gone on his dad, probably. And she was like, go, idiot. Do you realize you have to read between the lines, understand what she's not trying to say? And then he realizes and he's like, okay, fine, I'm going to go.
I want to say this. I actually have like friends who have teenage sons who have had the exact same conversations with them. Like a girl will give them something on Valentine's Day and the boy's like, so what? I'm like, no. Not so what? Do something about it. So I've heard stories like from friends of mine who have teenage kids. It's like, this is such a like, girls more mature and boys are just clueless completely. Like, so this is, it's sort of all those conversations came to me and the mom was like, no, this is not the way to do this. She's gonna let her walk home. What are you doing here? This again, I had forgotten, and I some of my, you know, when you talk about the dialogues, I had forgotten how funny the show is, because I have literally laughed out loud like in these two episodes like so much. And this is almost like a sitcom, right? Like what, like, and then then she's like, go after him, and he's like, you know, confused, like should I not, and I should, but he's what, scared of his mom, of, and I don't know what he's doing in his head, because I don't understand how teenage boys think, but then she gives him the dinosaur raincoat. The dinosaur raincoat is so funny. Like, so they're both in yellow raincoats. So only hers is like a grown-up yellow raincoat and his is with the, I don't know whose raincoat is that. It's like a customer's raincoat. And then he runs and he literally, it's symbolic, right? He literally doesn't fly to her, but like a pendulum, he's swinging from one end to the other. And he just leaps towards her, right? And it's amazing. And the fact that he lands in front of her and he doesn't say that I like you or anything. He's just, you know, he's like, I just wanted to be here. And that's it. And she just acknowledges it. And there's this quite unsaid thing between them, sort of that nails there, whatever the shape of the relationship is right now.
And I loved how the camera pauses on her face. And her expression is like surprise and happiness. And he's like, I can't believe he's doing this. Is it for me? Like the whole expressions on, and her, I think even her face is very expressive. So she's just looking at him like, and I think she's so adorable. Like frame it, frame that photo of hers and stick it on your wall. She's gorgeous in that.
I just want to add that. So for me personally, the scenes between Bong-suk and Hyosu, where it didn't always work for me. And I think I mentioned it a little bit in the previous episode. Like I liked in the first couple of episodes, I liked just them getting to know each other. And then towards the end of the season, you know, all the events that happen and how that affects their relationship and all that, I enjoyed that. The middle part, like including, I think starting from here, again, I'm not the target demographic for this angle. And again, I feel like I've aged out of it now.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the parents' perspective more, and not just Han Yu-ju's character, but you know the Hulk's character as well. Just them, how they're reacting as parents to their kids' feelings, their struggles, their relationships, like how they're reacting to that, because now I'm seeing it from their perspective. So while this relationship between Bong-suk and Hyosu, like it wasn't something that I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like it didn't work for me that way. But the strongest point of it for me was the music whenever there were scenes involving these two. It always made me, I don't know, it did have this effect on, like, you know, reminding me of my old days.
Teenage crushes.
Teenage romantic days. That's the better way to put it. It was such lighthearted, kind of quirky music, and it was really nice and just very, very romantic. So I think for me, that was the strongest part of any scenes depicting these two.
Yeah, so I'm a tone-deaf person, so music is not something I always like gravitate towards you, but now that you've pointed out, like, I can make the correlation. Yeah, I can make the correlation.
I think this drama has excellent background music, like, for all scenes, be it the romance ones or the serious ones or the fight scenes also. People loved how the score has been played out in the series. It adds to the story. So while this lovey-dovey thing is happening and Bong-suk and Hyosu are falling, Bong-suk is in love with her for sure. She is also starting to like him. At this point, it has switched from this lovely 90s rom-com to Tarantino's area of Kill Bill violence. At the same time, Misu's dad is delivering chicken and he's forgotten his way. So he goes into the shopping complex where he's going to deliver a chicken. He's just hunting his way. But before that, what has happened is Frank has entered this parlor and this salon lady and starts asking her questions. And who wants to kick in? Benny, you want to talk about it? Vipula, you want to talk about it?
I want to hear your take on the violence scene, Meenal. You wanted to talk about it, right? Go ahead.
Okay. So basically, Frank goes in and he's sitting on the... She's giving him a hair massage. And he asks questions to her. Do you have children? And do they go to this school? And I loved how amazingly how aware and alert Naju was. Because I'm sure they are in hiding, but over a period of years, nobody's hunted them. Nothing has happened to her. She's carrying on with her day life, right? Nothing has happened to her. Suddenly, this guy walks in and she realizes, okay, why are these questions being asked of me? And she's quick to remove her hair scissors and jab him in the neck. And that scene is excellent because she thinks she's got him and he pulls out and she realizes he's healing. And she's like, okay, this is not happening. This is much bigger. And then it goes another level where she goes into different spots in her parlor and she's pulling out God knows what kind of artillery to fire at him. And I was like, what is going on? How prepared was this woman? But her power, which they have shown, is just blew my mind away. Completely.
Exactly. And I think for all these assassinations, right, I'm waiting for the moment, like, what is the power, right? Like, I'm like, what is going to happen? Because they're all physically adept, right? They're all like good fighters in all these scenes. They all know how to fight. Right. So you're like, what's going to happen now? Like, how will she get out of this? And then you're always hoping they'll survive.
Yeah. So essentially the super ability is where she can see through the walls. They just become transparent. She can see on the other side. And Frank has no idea that he had this kind of fight coming. I mean, he did in a way, but not to this level. I feel like if she had known that this guy, her life is in danger, she would have thrashed him and run away. Like, she would have conquered him. But it was just the surprise of the attack that took her down. But she was well prepared for anybody coming to her parlor.
Also, I don't know, how do you kill someone who heals, right? Like, unless you nuke them, there doesn't seem to be any way of killing these.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel it's such a lost cause, right? It's just all his fights, they can just get longer and longer with every episode, right? Because he doesn't freaking die. And I think we are beginning to see a little bit of Frank's character build up now, right? And the way he's not just a dumb assassin, like he's very crafty. And like the way he's asking the questions, the way he's trying to weasel the information out. So he's not just like a muscle, right? That's interesting. I would say if I was a detective and a guy with an FE Express jacket popped up in all my video feeds, I would, that's a really bad cover.
Yeah.
Like, why change your clothes every single time? So maybe get a different truck or a different car.
It was my favorite fight scene until this four episode. Like, of the three killings, this was my favorite. I don't know if I'm sounding good right here right now, where I'm appreciating people getting the way they are getting killed. That's not right.
No. It's fiction. It's okay.
I'm just trying to say, like, how well executed it was. Moving is constantly going to do this. Float from one genre to the other. And there's always a worry that they will slip somewhere. Somewhere the drama will falter. And I'll be honest, I kept waiting and waiting, and this drama didn't falter at all. Like, they aced everything.
So on a show like this, which is about superpowered individuals, as a viewer, you go in expecting these kind of scenes. You want to see fight scenes. You want to see superpowered individuals duke it out. But it's actually a very good case study that of what's going on with, like, the Marvel films these days, right? Marvel, DC, all these superhero films. Many of them are not doing well. They have the flashiest, you know, visual effects, all, you know, interesting superpowered characters, but they're not doing well because they forget the human element, right? The human element, which was one of the main reasons why Marvel films was doing well for so long. Now, the recent films and shows, they don't focus on it too much, or it's not believable at all. So people are just tuning out or just getting bored of it. And Moving is a great example of how they managed to do both. You know, we've talked about all these different relationships in this show. There's that. I mean, if you took out the superhero part of it and just did a show on their relationships, the show would be great by itself.
Yes,
it would still work, yeah.
In the same way, if you separated the action part and made it a purely action film, like maybe like a John Wick or one of those flashy ones, it would be okay. It wouldn't be great because it's still missing the human element, but it still would be good. So to blend both aspects and do it so well is a testament to what the showrunners, the actors, all the technicians, all the effort that they put in. And this fight scene is such a great example because, you know, many of these fight scenes will have someone who's like woefully undermatched, and you just know how it's going to end up. But in this fight scene, both of them are equally matched. And I was just, one of the reasons why I call it one of the best choreographed fights from the show is, and especially this, I was able to appreciate it even more on my second watch. So right from the moment, he's getting his hair done and all of that, I'm like thinking from Naju's perspective, I'm like, okay, what would I do? Okay, I have all these scissors, just like stab him in the neck. 10 times out of 10, that person should die, right? And like every single decision she made was the most logical in her fight with Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Many movies and shows make mistakes in this because as a viewer, you'll be watching and be like, wait a minute, why did he do that? That doesn't make any sense. Well, the reason that the character does that is because the director is looking at the end point. He's like, okay, this person has to die. So for that to happen, this person has to do this very basic elementary mistake. But in this, you cannot fault either of them. Both are having such a very strategic, logical fight. And you're like, okay, I don't even know how this is going to end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's what you want as a viewer. You know, you want to be surprised. You want to be in suspense of how this is going to end. And Naju was like, I cannot fault her for any of the, I mean, she just was never going to win because of who Frank was. And she's practically broke him.
I just loved where she had hid all her weapons and how she knew exactly what level of weapon to get out at what time. Like, that's insane amount of memory, okay? I have lost my memory, so I'm like, you know, off it. What an agent she must have been, yeah, on the ground. What a field agent she must have been.
Yeah.
So I was just blown away. It's like what? It's like a 3-4 minute, 5 minute scene. But this is what, you know, this drama does. It just captivates you on these scenes.
I like the lighting in the fight sequence. I like that slightly subdued salon lighting. And for me, the visual elements were very, very pretty.
Yeah.
Fight scene. There's a lot of like debris and dust towards the end and just, they're fighting. They're also fighting in the dark, essentially. So it's that's also very interesting. And for me, I think all Frank's fight scenes, in the past, I do like the fact that he knows they are, you know, superpowered individuals, but he's also coming with a level of confidence, right?
Yeah.
He's not coming prepared with weapons and whatever. It's like, I'm enough. I'm more than enough to take with them. So I like the fact that he gets thrashed around quite a bit. Like that's good for him. And it's interesting, right? Because now at this point, I want to know, will he meet his match?
Yeah.
Like, is this like an endless spree he's going to go on, or will this end? So now after three kills, you know that this guy eventually wins, right? And because Naju put up the best fight like ever, right? So he eventually wins. So now will this end? Is there a way to solve this?
Correct.
So that was my other takeaway. So as a viewer, I'm like, okay, will he ever like meet his match? And then before she dies, Naju tells him that you are second string, which I'm assuming means second rate or second, you're not good enough, right?
Correct.
And I think it sort of pokes his ego, which I like this humanization of Fran that you're beginning to see, right? It's like, what's second string? So that's nice. And then this is my Frank Hulk meet cute scene, right? They meet in the corridor and they're just crossing paths and their fates are intertwined in the future. And then Gyurung Pyo and his fried chicken.
No, but you have to talk about that, a minute of the buildup, okay? The tension in the air. You have to talk about
yes.
that.
Frank has just murdered someone brutally and he's just done his job. He's out. And then our fried chicken guy, Gyurung Pyo, or the Hulk, as we'll call him eventually, he's coming very excited for his first order. And he's like soaked in rain, and they just meet in the hallway, and you're like, will they pass each other? Will they stop and talk? And they stop and talk. And he wants to just, it's a very simple conversation. Nothing exciting happens. Don't get your hopes too high. But so he basically wants to know the direction. And then Frank is basically, you know, and this just, he says, you're on the wrong floor or something. And then, and they just stare and they're just standing there. And then Frank moves away. And then, you know, Gyuren Pyo calls him out. And I'm like, oh my God, does he sense something? And then he walks towards him slowly and hands him his business card and saying, if you order 10 fried chickens, you get the 11th one free.
That man's dedication to his work, his passion for fried chicken, is something that I am jealous of, because I love fried chicken myself. So I am very, very impressed with him.
Also, like, how can you look so menacing while, like, giving a business card? Like, you will never get any business like this if you look that scary while handing out a business
Actually,
card.
I would. I'd be like, oh, this guy really wants me to eat his fried chicken. I'm going to have to give it a try now.
So that's it. That's the, I think, gist of the fourth episode. But any characters or any dialogues you guys want to call out before we jump to the next?
Well, even before we get to that, though, it's hard for me to accept that after that very loud and violent, vicious fight, when the Hulk is going there, are you sure, like, nothing is smoking? Nothing is, like, you know, there's debris everywhere. He still, like, completes everything, right? Like, the delivery of the food delivery and everything. And I'm like, that's really hard to believe. Like, there's no sirens in the air, so... That part took me out. It took me out a little bit, but yeah, that was the only.
But you know what I was thinking? Have you seen this shopping complex, which was in Vincenzo, where they showed these big buildings? And then lots of shops and alleyways and shops and shops and shops. If it's in one corner of the second floor and this guy's on the third floor, he's not even going to realize this has happened. That's what I thought.
I think most of the shops were closed also. I think it was late at night. Most of the businesses were closed. I think there was only one drunken party going on where one of the male leads delivers a fried chicken. And I think what's for me, just like, coming back to the, like, funny, like, dialogues, like, just for me, it was all the funny dialogues, like Wong-suk assuring Hyosu, I had zero friends. Like, the number of times he sort of emphasized, like, no friends, zero friends. I was like, no, this is not how you impress a girl. This is not going. Okay. Stop saying that, dude. And then basically, we talked a stretch about Min Hyun's scenes and her dialogues, and I love the fact, like, what do I do with all this cabbage? Like, it's like the exasperation of a mom, right? Like, she plays it so well. Like, those are the things. And then the next morning, I have to call this out because it cracked me up so much. Now Bong-suk is following Hyosu around like a puppy dog. You know, he's this first very much puppy love phase right now. And he's literally following her like a puppy dog. And he goes on a holiday to help her work out. And he's waiting for her on the mat so she'll start the push-ups. And he's all prepped with all the weights hanging. Like, you know, hit me with whatever you will. I will not fly. And she's like, I'm not doing this today. So anyway. I will shut up now. Yeah, that was super cute.
Yeah, but what I loved is Miyun giving worldly advice to her son. What's the point of waving your hand after the bus has left? Like, just go, chase her, which I loved coming from a mom. I was like, yeah, well, that's the way to go. And now we come into Hisu's backstory in episode 5. And I don't know, Benny, you want to talk about? Because I'll be honest, this was the most really hard watch. I mean, I struggle with bullying scenes when they show in K-dramas. And it's heartbreaking to know that it's actually the reality in the schools as well. So yeah, you can take the stage on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's been building up to this moment, right? For the last few episodes, we saw like some brief flashbacks that Hisu was having. There was like a brief scene where it looked like she was in a fight and there was blood and all of that. So obviously she's been asking Wong-suk, like, don't you want to know my secret? And he's this, I don't know, this pure child from the heavens who's like saying all the right stuff. And he's like, no, I don't know if it's a bad memory. I'm like, who thinks like that? I really wish there were more people like you in the real world.
That's why I call him Sunshine. He's such a sweetheart. He's such a sweetheart.
So obviously we get to the part where she reveals her story. And yeah, this is when I realized, man, this show and this episode can really be dark sometime. Because obviously it reveals like how from her childhood, like they've been moving a lot. Her dad has been like moving her around a lot. And she's obviously had issues at this one particular school that, you know, this episode will focus on, where there are this very vicious school bullies. And you're right, Mino. I don't know. I've seen bullying content on or bullying scenes in like several movies and TV shows, be it Indian, Hollywood, anything. But Korean shows have, they really know how to get your blood boiling. Like, and it's not just this show, but so many movies and shows.
I think, Benny, so I have gone through the same journey as you have, as you know, you have younger kids than I do. But once you become a parent, you automatically, every scene is from the parent's eyes, like every relationship dynamic. And I just cannot watch this. It makes me super paranoid, because my son is going to go to middle school soon, and they're getting more independent. Like I and they all know these terms. Like I have to, like, you know, just so what's casually ask him, is anyone bothering you? Are you bothering anyone? Because it's both ways as a parent, right? You want your child to do the right thing, and you also don't want him to be a victim of something. So it hits too close to home. And it was a very difficult, I think Glory first episode, I tapped out. I was like, I can't do this right now. Maybe 10 years after my son is in college. It reminds me of the hazing rituals you have in college, which were so notorious when you were growing up. Very violent, very sexual, very abusive at all levels, right? So, yeah.
No, I was just going to make reference to two series, Weak Hero Class 1 and The Glory. And they are all about school bullying and very, very intense scenes. And they're not easy watches at all. So that's the recall I was getting when Jesus' whole, that backstory started playing out. It was really hard watch.
Yeah, you know, most Hollywood movies or even like Indian films where they show bullying, it's a lot of the times it's done for the effect of comedy, right? So, and you know, the bully is going to get what's coming to them.
Correct.
But in Korean shows, it's always like you watch it almost like cringing, or just like almost like self-protective, because it's so affecting, because the actors almost always do a great job. It's almost like they're not acting. At that point, both of you mentioned The Glory. I watched it completely, and there were some really rough scenes in it.
Very rough scenes.
But one other show was, I don't know if you guys have watched All of Us Are Dead, which is that zombie, it's a K-drama, the zombie outbreak, and it's really centered on the school. That also has some really... It has some really awful bullying scenes in it too. So I feel like maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the intention of Korean filmmakers and you know, television like showrunners, when they depict these scenes, they're saying, hey, this is a real thing and look at how awful it is. If you as a viewer looking at something, a piece of art or fiction, you know, and if that makes you uncomfortable, take a look at what's happening in the real world in our schools and colleges. So, I mean, I've seen sometimes news reports, even like when The Glory released, I think one of the actors was actually involved in a real life bullying scandal. So it sounds like it's a real problem in Korea. So, and this show doesn't hold back either. In this episode, you know, it's like they want the viewer to be like boiling with rage and wanting to like step in and, you know, fight against the bullies, because those girls and even the boys, they're, I was like, man, you are awful. I know kids are kids, but you're actually old enough to not be this. You're just evil at this point.
And my question in all these scenes are like, where are the grown-ups? Like, what kind of school is this? Like, you actually have bullying couples. It's not just one person. You have like a girlfriend, boyfriend bullying people. Like, I was like, what level of bullying is this? Where are the teachers? Where are the grown-ups? And, you know, I 100% agree with you, Benny, that they want us to feel the rage that we are feeling. That they're, because we are also sort of standing in for Hyosu's point of view, right? Like, we are seeing what she's seeing. And basically, the director is asking in our head to make a choice, like, what would you do in this situation?
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Which is a dilemma that Husu is going through. So there's absolutely the pushing of the buttons. Like, what would you do if you were there? Like, because you ask yourself, right? If I was there, how will I stop this?
Correct. Yeah. And she does the right thing, right? She first goes and tells the teacher. That's what you would do, that expecting that the teachers would do something about it. But then she realizes they're not going to do anything about it. And that's when she decides, okay, you know what? I've had enough. And the way her rage is shown, that the pen, the fluorescent marker on her book where she hits the desk, like she's trying to control because she's like, I have 3 months to go. I should not be getting into this. My dad's moved around so much for me. So there's a line which she says that he had earned through daily labor for 10 years. That's 4,000 days of daily labor. Like, she is conscious how much her dad has done for her. And she knows that this is going to rip apart everybody.
Yeah, it does make me happy for Hyosu's character. Even with all of that, you know, like, she's controlling herself. She's aware of what her dad has done for her. But at the same time, if you see some sort of injustice around you and you're in a position to do something about it, why not do it? And I don't think this is a uniquely Korean thing. I know even in India, we have this issue where something happens in public and there are just bystanders just like watching and not stepping in. And it's an awful thing. And if I had the power, I would like to think that I would be able to step in and kind of do the same thing that she did. So I was really proud of her character. My only thing is I wish it was longer, that scene where she fights the bullies, because I wanted to see them get it.
The fight scene is very brutal. And I was reading up is that they fought in like wet mud. So she's like, that mud was coarse. So she did actually get scratches and... she got hit, and then she's saying it was very hard because my character's supposed to have healing powers, so I have to be unscathed in the next scene. So there was a lot of makeup and pains taken to hide all the scratches, which is very interesting.
That's nice trivia, right?
Yeah. And it isn't an easy scene. That was hard watch for me, but I couldn't forward it at the same time. I couldn't press the forward button because I really wanted to see what she's gonna do. Which is not easy, honestly.
I will say this, and I did forward the fight scenes because I can only watch so much blood and gore. So I would like pause, forward, pause. I want to just go back to what Benny said. I like the, you know, going just back to Hyosu's, you know, thought process that we get to see, right? Like, she's like, you know, she's questioning what's happening. She knows it's wrong. She doesn't know when to step in. Should she step in? And they show that whole thing to us, a whole journey till she makes a decision, right? And at this point, we don't know what she knows about herself.
Yeah.
Right? We don't know what is driving those decisions. So it's easy for us to assume that she's thinking that I don't want to expose what I really am. But we don't know if this is coming from her dad, this is coming from herself. Like, a lot of unknowns as to why. Is she just scared? What is happening, right? So I think that just becomes clearer as it goes. And because the actual power reveal happens during the fight sequence, right? Like, the very first clear, 100% no confusion, this is, she has these super healing powers, happens during the fight sequence. And this is where I'm going to talk about, when we come to it, is the parenting approaches of both the parents, and how two single parents having kids with superpowers dealt with their childhoods and their different parenting styles. And so that's for me, that's a very interesting contrast in the show, is how they bring that together and how one was super paranoid, overprotective of their child's power. And then this one parent who we don't know what they talked about the power, if they talked about the power at all, and the one child is more independent because they were all running, but one got a more stable home. The other didn't get as much of a stable home. So just that's been an interesting contrast of parenting styles I saw in both these kids.
Yeah. And I think the dialogue that follows, right? So now she's fought 17 bullies in her school, and she has come out unscathed. There is not a scratch on her. Others have been with bruised arms, fractures, God knows what. So poor thing, her dad has to come and apologize, settle, just shell out everything, whatever he has, his life savings, sell their house, and they're back to square one with zero money. And she's feeling a lot of guilt. Yeah. But the first question she asks her father is that, Appa, do you know why I'm like this? And again, I love the drama that it doesn't spell out what their abilities or powers are, right? They're having these dialogues and it's for the viewer to interpret and understand and infer from what's going on. This, and he says, I didn't. So there is a backdrop where he was in a car accident with her mother. Her mother died and she survived. So obviously there's a hint that she survived the accident because she could heal. She's like, why am I like this? And he says, you got that from me. And the fact that you fought for something unjust was happening around you, you got it from your mother. It's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful dialogue. And then he says, your mom would have been overjoyed if she knew you were like me. And knowing that she would have been happy, I'm more happier now. So here is where the life has just come apart. You know, he doesn't know what to do now, but I just loved it. This scene has so many layers in my view. It is a great reveal to the audience that she gets her healing powers from the dad. There's some genetic transfer about these abilities going on. And the fact that he understands her point of view. He could have easily lost his head, lost her cool. Like, why did you have to get in? Why did you do this? Look where we've landed. He does nothing of that. He's such an amazing dad. How many parents have this kind of approach? I was just blown away. I think I watched that scene 2-3 times again and again because I was almost welling up. Like, it's just the parent-daughter relationship is beautiful in this.
Yeah. And I want to say, and I don't know if Vipula knows or remembers, but Meenal knows, I am such a softie and I'm an easy target for these kind of scenes and dialogues. I'll be a mess when they do this. And I've talked about this on the Talking Talkies podcast as well. But when I rewatch this, you know, for this podcast and knowing what happens later in the show to these characters, in a sense, what they go through. So when I rewatch it the second time, my mind went there and it makes it even more beautiful, which is why I think viewers who have only watched this once, I would strongly suggest watch it a second time, because there are very few shows which are really good for rewatch, because you're able to appreciate things a lot more than you thought you could. So especially this dialogue, it makes more sense when something, a very important event occurs, which we'll definitely spend a lot of time talking about when we get to it. But I just rewatching this scene and remembering what happens, I was just like, oh no. I was a mess during this scene.
Yeah, the writer has written this, took the webtoon, knew that he didn't have the scope to elaborate on these emotional scenes in the webtoon, came here with a whiteboard, has gone from start to end, written stories, and then said, oh, this should go here, this scene should go there, then there's a callback. That's what he's done. He's had a grid. I'm quite sure the way he's done this. It's amazing. And I missed this in the fourth episode. There is a little callback. Bong-suk has a dream.
Yes.
He's floating in the air. He's gone high up in the sky. And somebody comes and tells him, oh, you flew. I am so proud of you, my Bong-suk. And it's a guy. And we don't know who it is. Though there is a hint of who it is, but we don't know anything who it is. So these elements is like just, wow. What have you done, Kang Ful, the writer? I'm in awe of him.
It's very well stitched together. And like Benny was saying right now, so we have seen the first time around and we know who the mother is. We know that story. So when we know her relationship with you know, Kyung Pro and his wife's relationship, right? We know how that came around. So all these scenes hit differently. They hit stronger now. Like, you know, your mother would have been proud because now the mother is a real person in my head, right? I know who she is. Apart from the emotional strength of the scene, the most surprising thing was that Hyosu and her dad had spent their entire lives not telling each other that they have powers.
Yeah.
Right? For me, that was very surprising and very, very different from, again, Bong-suk and Min-hoon's approach, right? Where there is power is a liability. We have to protect you. Everyone knows you don't show it. You hide it. Here is, we don't talk about it. And we'll see what happens, basically. So it's a very different approach. But the thing that's common is very loving parents, very protective parents, very strong, you know, parent-child relationship. I was generally astounded that all these years of Hugh's existence, her father and they both have been hiding the secret from each other, which is very interesting.
Yeah. As a child, she would have fallen.
Yes.
She would have tripped. She would have had scratches. And
yeah.
How did he not get it? So, but then there is a side to it. Actually, when you come to his character and his story, you realize the absent-mindedness, the forgetful. It just plays out and you realize, okay, it might have not struck him that she could be like this. So this is a great drama on parenting also, right?
We talked about the teen romance in this show so far. And of course, we're seeing exploration of parenting, you know, the parent-child relationship. But one thing we'll see in the coming episodes is also adult romance, or I should say mature romance, not just like the very stereotypical K-drama romance, right? Which is fun. I love that kind of very absurd, extravagant, kind of like extra kind of K-drama romance. But the mature romance that is depicted, which we'll explore in the next phase of this show, again, amazing. So they really knew how to touch on each relationship, how each relationship is unique in its own way. And, you know, yeah. So again, great work.
So when we come to the romance of the parents, etc., there are parallels in those relationships, but at the same time, they're completely different the way they've taken the path, right? So it's the same with the parenting. It's same with how the kids are. I think Vipula made a point, like, we keep saying Hisu and Bongsuk are pretty much loners, right, in their own right, until they found each other. And their approach to life is very different, but they connect. They connect on a level. Before we go to the next elements about the conspiracy and more reveals happening, to close out Hisu and Bongsuk. So she's telling him, right, that this is how it happened and this is where it was and stuff. And they're coming back and she's like, I don't even remember my mom's face. To be honest, I was so small. I don't know whether she was upset or, you know, I don't remember her face. And this conversation has happened in the gym where she says, I don't know whether my mom knew or not. And they're coming out and on their way home, he just stops and he tells her, she was smiling. She was smiling because she knew you had the power. That's all that he tells her. And I'm like, oh my God, can you find a Bongsuk for us in our lives? Like, who is this guy? How is he so concentrate? And how?
How does he know? How does he say right things all the time, right? And then, of course, Hyosu's expression. I think Hyosu had a lot to do in these two episodes. And she had a lot of range to show in these two episodes, like both romantic, you know, daughter, potential girlfriend, just like dorky teenager. She showed all of that really, really well. And I'm really looking forward to what she does in the future, like her work. I think she's just starting out, right? Like, she's just a long way to go.
Vipula, you know she's coming with Kim Suno, right? In a drama.
I know! Oh my God! That's like my dream team! Dream team. Meeran, you and I will do a live on that, okay?
Live commenting on this one.
Yes, yes.
Benny's like, why have I got stuck here with these two women?
It's fine.
Sorry.
So we went to the past and we've come to the present now. Obviously, Naju's been murdered. And obviously, there's going to be an investigation. You realize a bigger conspiracy is starting to play out because Miyun has come to that building to observe what's happened. And subtly, the way the Hulk moves around the premises, looking at the CCTV, you know, damaging the forest ranger's car so that he can buy time around what's going on. My question is, did Miyun realize it's him?
I remember when I watched it the first time, and then we got towards the end of the season, I actually got back to this scene and I was like, she should have recognized him because she's obviously interacted with him before. But then when I rewatched it the second time, I noticed that she never sees his face. She only sees the back of his head.
You're right.
So she never really sees, she does make note, okay, there's this one person who's very curious about what's going on and maybe involved in some way. But at the same time, she cannot see his face at all.
That's what I agree with Benny on that. Yeah.
But they've established that there is an NIS angle because you get the background of why the school was started, right? That that principal is there investigating after Hisu's incident.
National
Talent Development Program, NTTP. And I'm like, what are these guys doing? So they've been running it for 10 years. And he comes and tells, finally, you will get some results out of it. So are they grooming them to be a part of NIS?
Yes.
Okay, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I think it's still not clear. Like, I don't know what the role is. So there, you get a hint that Frank is a US agent. Yeah. You get that quite clear by now. There's a line that the head of that NIS says that, you know, earlier we used to run everything by the US. That basically means there has been a falling out.
Correct.
There was a program previously, and now we are doing something different and new. And there's a US liaison that we don't know what his role is. So there are still a lot of unknown questions. Like, what is this program? Is it genetic? Is it natural? Is it a breeding program? And we now we know the school, something is with the school, right?
Yeah.
That there is the school has a target group there. As are all the students with superpowers? Are they picking them? Are they training them?
Yeah.
So I feel like as a viewer, I still don't know where the larger conspiracy plot is going. And not more than not where it's going, what is its purpose, right? That's very unclear. Like, okay, so you are a government super agent, so what do you do, right? Like, what is your purpose? So I do have to say this because this occurred to me, the NIS building looks like an evil headquarter building. So I don't know if anything good will come out of
No, nothing is good is going to come out of it. That for sure.
Yeah, so I feel like still, it's just the pieces of puzzle are not together yet. And then the last scene, I want to really quick, the girl that used to sort of save from bullying, she comes as a student to their current school. And does she have superpowers is my question. I don't remember. I don't remember if she ever shows up again.
Good. I was going to call it out in the characters at the end. I'm glad you called this. So again, to the viewers, don't miss this little one. Okay. She's shy. She's in the background. But again, she's not going to be like in your face in the whole drama, but she's going to come at a very pivotal point, and that kind of is going to drive further how this story will move. But before I go to Bongemon's dad's funeral, did you want to talk about Naju and her daughter?
So obviously we know from previous episodes that, you know, Frank is very interested in the children, right? He asks the previous guy that he killed, do you have children? And then he asked Naju as well. So obviously we know that he is also targeting, you know, not just the people on the list, but their children as well. So we know that there is something going on beyond just a mere list. This is like a total wiping out of a lineage, which is very sinister when you pause and think about it. It's
absolutely.
Actually really, really
absolutely.
Dark.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Frank as the character was wondering, oh man, I should have thought about this for the second one too. I should have just gone to everybody's funeral and waited for their children to show up. He goes to the funeral, and the whole thing with the daughter, I was confused because obviously she has some adopted kids, and you know, one of the sons has this conversation with Frank. He seems like a really nice guy, by the way. And he tells the whole story to Frank. And then he does mention the daughter is dead, or she died like 10 years prior. And then towards the end of the scene, and by the way, I should mention that there is a nice touch added to Frank's character to make it, obviously we'll see a little bit of his backstory in the coming episodes, but to this point, we just see him as this cold, very clinical assassin, right? He just goes, does his job. He says it's not personal. He does his job and goes. But there was a nice touch here where it's just one line, but he asked, was she a good mother? You know, that was, and again, that's like that human element, right? It's not a caricature of an assassin. It's an actual person. So,
but there's a reason why he asked that, Benny. You get that when you get Frank's backstory, why it was important for him to know.
Right, right. We can't talk too much about it now.
We can't. So,
but yeah, the daughter thing, it's really hard to talk about this without talking about what happens in the future. So we'll definitely talk about this a little bit more when we get to it. But I was confused because at this point, you know, as a viewer, you're told, okay, the daughter died 10 years prior. And then they show this girl who's kind of like overhearing.
Yeah. Yes.
And you could think like, well, maybe this is the daughter, but it's very unclear. And we are left with questions about that.
Lots of questions. And that's what. So Frank has now walked out of the funeral hall and he's heading back. And suddenly the lights flicker for a minute or two. And he turns to figure out what's happening. And that's when they focus on Cha Tae-yoon's dad, where the reveal comes that it's the electricity guy that was killed in the previous episode.
I'm sorry to harp on this again. Frank, why don't you go back inside? Just think, wait a minute, I've killed more than one person in the last few days. There should be more than one funeral, which means there are more people, more creatures. If he had done that, he would have seen this one person looking very suspicious. And he's had a run-in with him, kind of. I don't know if he ever noticed it, with that whole buzz.
Yeah, he has the whole accident, right? Before he was going to kill his dad. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I know it's all in hindsight, but if I was Frank, I would have thought that way. I was like, wait a minute. You know, one stone, two birds kind of situation. Let me go see if there's anybody there. And he might have run into him. But anyway, I was just thinking that's a missed opportunity for Frank.
I do agree with you. I am very upset with him using the same truck and the same costume in every murder that he's committed. That is my biggest pest peeve. Like, hi, it's me again.
But, you know, the level of excellence this drama has shown, we can give them the benefit of the doubt that these things got slipped out. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is also drama building, right? They have to do some setup for the story to propel forward. I mean, otherwise you could end this in one episode. That's not how storytelling. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's what we... And you know, the beauty I want to tell the viewers is, if anybody's planning to read the webtoon as well, if you get into moving, and that's how I read the webtoon, well into like 10 episodes, I said, oh, I want to go... Curiosity, I want to know what happens. Frank is not even a character in the webtoon.
Really?
No, there's no character of Frank in the webtoon.
Who's the assassin then?
So confused. If no one is wiping out what happens in the webtoon.
I can't reveal what is the actual plot of the webtoon because that's the finale of the drama.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah.
Oh, I get it now. I get it. Okay.
So we have to go through it. And because I started like cross-referencing. So anyway, so this is for the your listeners and viewers who are planning to get into moving and are curious to read the webtoon. So that's why I said I loved why the writer has been given the freedom to do what he wants, introduce new characters. And I think he's notched it up in the drama. It's just fantastic. So now we finished both 4 and 5. We've covered them off. I just wanted to call out to one actress, and her name is Kim Shin-rok, who plays the assistant to the NIS director. She's got very few scenes in this series. But before moving, I had watched Reborn Rich, and I was like, hang on, she has such a stellar role. She's in Beyond Evil also. She's the detective. And I was like, why is she playing such a itsy-bitsy role in this one? And then you realize as you go along moving series, which I said before also, there are so many great actors picking up small parts in the series. What a sales pitch the director has given. I am in awe of this director and writer duo. Brilliant. Well done. So yeah, this was my call out to that character and actress, if people keep noticing. So Benny, I think we're going to do this religiously because we had so much fun answering Benny's question last time before we wrap up our today's episode. Benny, what's the question for us?
So I'm being very self-indulgent by titling this myself, calling it Benny's Corner. Maybe I'll be the only one who appreciates that.
I like the name. You have my vote, Benny, for Benny's Corner.
I appreciate it, Vipula. I appreciate it. I appreciate both of you indulging me on this exercise. The question or this exercise really is, so based on the 4 and, well, actually really based on all the episodes that we've seen so far, and especially what Frank has been dealing with, right? Like going after these people on the list, all these superpowered individuals, and they're all working in different jobs, you know, like we have just the few people that we have met. There's a chicken shop owner. There's another restaurant owner. There's a hairstylist, bookstore owner, all of these bus drivers. So there are so many different jobs that all these superpowered individuals are involved in. And so my question to you is, if you were in that situation where you had to go, you know, in hiding and essentially create a new life for yourself. What kind of job would you choose where your power, and this doesn't have to relate to whatever you mentioned in the last episode, but it could be any power. So a job where you can actually utilize your power and at the same time stay hidden from someone like Frank as much as possible. I mean, you can't help it if he has a lisp, but as much as possible, you don't arouse suspicion from others.
So, Ripala, you want to go first?
I'm still thinking. Benny, why don't you go? What have you thought so far?
I will go first because it's absolutely dumb. Okay? If you guys expect some sort of intellectual answer here, you're not going to get that from me. I'm so sorry to disappoint. But I think the job that the Hulk has is like my dream job. You know, owning a fried chicken shop. You know, when I was a kid, I used to dream of vending machines that would just dish out like fried chicken and french fries. Like that was like my dream.
Oh my goodness.
In childhood. Like whenever I used to see these vending machines with sodas and snacks, I'd be like, why is there nothing for like fries or like fried chicken?
Benny's a doctor and he's like fried chicken and fries.
Hey. Just don't, you know, don't do as I say or whatever that saying is. owning a fried chicken shop is like a dream. I think it's a dream job for me. And also if I had a super power or a super ability in this case, because again, I'm not here to save anybody. Again, sorry. But I wish I had an amazing metabolism. So that whatever I eat doesn't stay, because I would just sit and I would not even care if there are no customers. I would just keep eating the fried chicken and, you know, fries and whatever, knowing that I'm going to be completely fine. I'm not going to blow up. I'm going to be still healthy enough. And who's going to, you know, someone like Frank comes in and he sees, really, with this power, this is what you're doing with your life? Like, no, you can't be. I got the wrong person and he's going to leave. So that would be my dream job, and practical is what I would say it is.
I don't think I can top that. No, I don't think I can top that answer. This is like two. You have thought, Benny has thought through every scenario. I thought of all the pros and cons. This is the dream job for him.
Like I said, again, you don't expect intellectual stuff from me.
I just thought of I could be a cricket journalist because my flying superpower can get me to places. And Frank is an American who knows jack shit about cricket. So he's not going to trace me. So that is all that I thought about. And I get to enjoy cricket. That's all I thought about.
That's fair. Very fair.
Vipula, you.
My dream job in any scenario, superpowers or not, is going to be a bookstore owner. It doesn't matter if I have superpowers or not. I want to own a bookstore at some point or run a bookstore or something. I mean, my ambition in life was to become a librarian. My dad wouldn't let me do it. So, you know, that's like a childhood ambition that I have to go back to at some point. So I want to be a bookstore owner. My superpowers which was still teleporting. I would want to add speed reading to it. That would be pretty awesome. Speed reading and teleporting. With teleporting, one of my things I love doing is visiting bookstores around the world. So I always make it a point to go to the local bookstore wherever I'm traveling. So that would help. I have zero escape strategies from Frank. Like, why will he come and kill a person who reads a book? Like, that's the most harmless thing you can do. But, you know, if you have to die, you have to die. What can you do about it?
Yeah.
So that's
I mean, he did kill a bookstore owner. He did not have any.
But I do want to call this out, right? Just because Benny brought this up again, and I do want to bring this up. We talked about the whole bullying scene, and we talked about, you know, getting angry and making a choice on what should we do. Let's remind ourselves that out of all the superpowers that we picked, none of us chose to do anything good for them.
Listen, we're talking practical stuff. Okay?
We are not young anymore. We just want to get through the rest of our life in peace. We've established this. So I think the listeners get it.
Exactly. 10, 15 years ago, I was a very ideal young man. I would have been like, yeah, I want to save people. I want to help people, do all that stuff. Now, older with like kids, you're like, man, I just want to get through the day without any screaming and whining, just some alone time just to read the book that I want to read.
Yeah,
that's all I ask for.
Exactly. It's absolutely fine. We've had that hyper excitement in your 20s and teenage, and now we're done with it. So, like, sorry. No, let us get through. So that's where we wrap up today's episode. And in the next episode, we're going to discuss two very important characters who are going to play a huge role. One of them is already playing a huge role. Another is going to play a huge role. And we'll be back soon for you guys discussing more. But you've already heard two episodes. If you have any feedback, write to us. And we look forward to your views on this amazing drama that we are loving talking about on Crash Landed on K-Dramas. Thank you, Benny and Vipula, and I'll see you again next week. If you enjoyed our episode, do spread the word. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handles are all in the episode notes. Leave us a review or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We would love to hear from you. So definitely get in touch with us. Until the next episode on Crash Landed on K-Dramas, Aniyo!